done a lot of talking about Macintosh recently. But today, for the first time ever, I'd like to let Macintosh speak for itself.
Hello, I'm Macintosh. It sure is great to get out of that bag.
Hello, and welcome to the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. We're back with the three amigos. We've got King Keeney. Leander is his first name. Hey, Leander.
Hey,
I was trying to remember the names of the frickin' three amigos guys, but I couldn't. It's just been too long. The only thing that was playing in my head was them doing their like chest dance and then their hip thrust.
I'm Lucky Dave.
I'm Ned Niederlander.
I'm Dusty Bottoms. So together we're
the three amigos.
I'm also joined by Buster Heine. Hey, Buster, welcome back.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
It's fantastic.
You don't remember the names of the three amigos, do you?
Dude, D'Artagnan.
No, I think you're thinking... Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking the... you're thinking of the Three Musketeers.
Oh, yes. You're thinking yeah, amigos.
Dang I'm thinking it. Amigos.
I know that Steve Martin is one of them.
Yeah, yes. As is Martin Short and Chevy and Chase. Chevy I just Chase. Couldn't remember their actual names. Anyway, hey, thanks to lynda.com for sponsoring this episode. That's Lynda. I love lynda.com because I love to learn, and I know a lot of you guys listening love to learn as well. And if you want to learn a new application or you want to learn how to take better photographs, Lynda has over 2,000 high quality video courses for you to choose from, all taught by industry-leading professionals. And you can learn a new skill set. You could even learn how to use Photoshop and, you know, go find a Photoshop job if you like to switch career paths. Oh. Head on over to lynda.com/cultcast. It's Lynda. Sign up for a free trial. We're going to talk a little bit more about them later in the show. But thanks to lynda.com for sponsoring. Buster, you weren't here last week. But we did a really fun segment that we're going to do again. Because I just want to know more about you personally and a little bit more about Leander, but only a little bit more.
Good. Yeah.
And that's called Get to Know Your Cultist is the new segment. It's a segment where we just kind of ask personal questions and then we answer them so people can learn more about us. And not that people want to learn any more about us, but, you know, times are slow. News is slow. So we're just going to roll with it.
I've been a good one. I know what we should ask.
I thought we already agreed what we were going to talk about.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got a good one for next time.
Well, what's yours?
Well, no, I don't want to say it now because I don't want to give away the surprise.
Okay, cool. So this week's is going to be the favorite movie that you've seen this year. Now, preface that with, it doesn't have to be a movie that came out this year. It just has to be a movie that you saw this year and that you really loved well enough to actually remember it. Buster, you seemed enthusiastic about yours.
Yeah,
would you like to start?
Sure. My choice is Fargo. I saw that for the first time
what?
A couple weeks ago, man.
Wow. When did that? I got to look this
up. I think 1996 or something.
I think you might be right. It came out in 1996. Wow. I was only four.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't old enough to go see it in theaters when it came out, so
I
Netflixed it. Mm-hmm. It was a good movie.
Yeah, it wasn't too too brutal for you. That movie's pretty savage.
It is, but you know what? I liked it. I watched it because I was listening to some of the Breaking Bad writers talking about, you know, movies that inspired them, and they said Fargo was one of them. And they said it's a bloodbath, so I had to watch it. And it was
you're like, torture, violence, and William H. Macy? I need to see this movie. Leander, what's yours?
Favorite movie I saw this year?
Yeah.
Mine's even older than Buster's. I hate to say it, but it was The Thing.
Oh, The Thing.
Is that the one with the clown?
Clown?
That was
you're
it.
A clown.
That was it.
The Thing was the...
What do you mean?
Russell, with Kurt Russell, right?
Kurt Russell, right. On an Arctic research station.
I don't know if I've ever seen this movie. It was that good, huh?
Oh my God, it's a classic.
Oh, it had Kurt Russell. It must have been old. He hasn't been in anything recent in a while.
Yeah, this isn't, you know, like Kurt Russell clowning around as Snake Plissken. This is like, you know, serious Kurt Russell.
Serious.
Snake Plissken? What?
Wasn't that the name of his character in Escape from New York?
God. You're assuming so much in that question. I have not seen that movie.
Oh, I don't see that one either.
Snake Plissken is his name.
I mean, you've never seen Escape from New York?
No,
you're a different generation. Either. I mean, we might as well be talking about, you know, it's ridiculous. You haven't seen any of these classic movies from the 80s?
No, wasn't he also in Escape from L.A.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was,
I think that was one of the worst movies from that year. Whatever year that was in.
Yeah,
it's probably one of the worst.
Stinker. Well, you know, like, all the movies I'm going to go see at the movie theaters, I haven't had a chance to see yet.
Mm-hmm. Just download them.
Oh, that's off true. ITunes. But I don't know. I want to pay. You know, like, that's kind of bad. That's kind of
well. Thieving. You can rent them on iTunes.
Yeah,
like well, they come out pretty quick.
Or Netflix.
Yeah, but they're not out yet. You know, like 12 Years a Slave. That's not out yet.
Yeah, that's in theaters still. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in fact, didn't it just now went on wide release, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
And I wanted to see Fruitvale Station. I didn't get a chance to see that.
Oh, yeah. I want to see that one.
There's
too.
A bunch of movies I want to see that are still in the theaters, too.
Right.
But I'll tell you one that I did see that I love this year, and then everyone's probably going to make fun of me. I saw The Hunger Games, finally. I watched it on Netflix.
That's
and
I'll just tell you, movie of the year?
I'm going to be Katniss this next Halloween. I'm just putting that out there.
Oh, come on. You're kidding me.
I'm dead serious. I thought it was a great movie.
You're, oh, my God.
I'm dead serious. I love that's sci-fi fantasy stuff.
Thank
and
you.
I was expecting to fully hate this movie. I thought it was going to be like the Twilight saga, which I have not seen those.
It's
I was
exactly
disappointed
like
that
Twilight.
Taylor Lautner wasn't in there, but it's not so juvenile. I mean,
yeah, what are you talking about?
Well, I've never seen Twilight,
Game
so I can't say that.
Everything.
But I thought the story was great. You guys didn't like it, huh?
Well, I don't know. I guess I have a problem with movies like kids killing kids and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. I felt the first one was a little bit troubling for me.
Well, I'm talking about the first one.
Yeah, I know. That's
okay.
What I'm saying. The first one, I actually liked the second one a little bit better than the first one.
I've heard that from a lot of people, actually.
But, you know, if that's your pick, I'm sorry.
I don't think the political point of the movies came through in the books, came through in the movies.
Right.
Probably not.
It was a weird movie because, like you said, Buster, it kind of makes entertainment out of kids killing kids. And I think, you know, the sort of the lessons there really weren't.
Right. Yeah. There was no like grand message in the first one of like, oh, this is bad. It was really just entertainment value. Kid like, you know, oh, I hope Katniss doesn't get killed by this big guy over there.
Right. I hope she thrusts a spear through his eyeball.
Yeah.
Even though he's only 14, but he's a bad kid.
I think kids killing kids is a wonderful form of entertainment. So I thoroughly enjoyed that aspect of the movie.
Well, she said she was inspired by, you know, like all of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And you know, all the young soldiers that died fighting these foreign wars. And you know, none of that came through at all. And
yeah,
she's also
exactly.
appalled by reality TV. And, you know, I don't think any of that stuff came
through.
Yeah,
I didn't really pick up on any of that. I was just like, oh, look, it's, I forget his name, that musician, Lenny Kravitz.
Oh,
I was like, there's
great.
Lenny Kravitz. Haven't seen him in a while. That's cool.
You know, Woody Harrelson really does make those movies for me, though.
He did a great job in those movies.
Doesn't he?
See, you're coming around. You're about to change your pick, huh?
No, I'm not going to change it. But, you know, I'm trying to warm up to you choosing Hunger Games as the best movie of the year.
Don't judge me, huh?
What about, have you seen Captain Phillips yet? Or
I haven't.
No, I've heard mixed reviews on that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, that's Get to Know Your Cultist. If you guys listening have any questions you'd like us to talk about, it could be anything. Shoot me an email, airfon@cultomac.com. You could tweet me at airfon, E-R-F-O-N. And we would love to hear your suggestions. Let's talk about some Apple news, though. Hey guys.
Mm.
Lots of great stuff to talk about this week. Leonard, I wanted to start with your... you posted something on cultomac.com asking for people to leave reviews for your book. Your Johnny Ive book on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You said it could even be a bad review in exchange.
Yeah.
You would give them access to like a video that you built, and it's basically like a mock representation of what the Apple Design Studio looks like.
Right.
And I was hoping you could just tell us kind of like if you could describe it to us, because I'd be really interested to hear like what it's like in there.
Yeah, okay. It was based on a sketch that Doug Satzker made for me of the layout of the studio, and he explained, you know, exactly where Johnny Ive's office was and where the different presentation tables were that
they used. Can I ask who, what's his name? Doug Satzker?
Douglas Satzker, and he was one of he was a member of the Apple design team for
so he's
for more
actually
than a
been in there.
Oh yeah, he worked
very
there every
familiar
day.
With that.
And
so
I took the sketch and I took some descriptions for you know for some other people and put together a got this guy to build a 3D model, and he looked at the blueprints for the building and made a very careful model of the Apple design studio, and then turned it into a 3D model that we did a video tour of. So
that's a great idea.
Around, yeah, it was and it worked out really well. So I show you where the studio is in on Apple's campus, you know, showing the outside of the building, and here it is on the ground floor. Then we go in through the front door, and we take and right in front of you are six presentation tables, and these are just like the tables in Apple's retail
stores. I was just
going to
say that's exactly what they looked like from the sketch I saw.
Well, this is where Steve Jobs got the idea because the designers used these tables to show Steve all the prototypes and all the stuff they were working on. And they had a different table for each different product. So there's an iPhone table, there's an iPad table, and a a MacBook table. And they cover and they're covered in black cloth. So all the prototypes, all the things they're working on, are covered in black cloth all the time. And then when they have a presentation to say, you know, the iPhone team, the executives, and Steve. They would bring Steve in, and then the hardware guy in front of the in charge of the iPhone, and they would lift up the blanket, the pill, but the cloth covering up all the models, and they would sit there and play with them, and they'd often do so like with the iPhone's probably not a good example, but say like the Mac Mini, when they were coming up with the Mac Mini, they wanted to know well how big should the Mac Mini be, and they had to choose between using a small mini drive for a laptop and a bigger regular 3.5-inch drive for a desktop. And they had 12 models made up, of mock-ups of a Mac Mini from small to big. And depending on what size they chose, depending on what size drive they could use. And, of course, the bigger 3.5-inch drives are much cheaper than the laptop drives. And they started at either end. They go, the small one, that's way too small. It's ridiculous. No one's going to use a computer that size. So they got rid of that. And then same at the other end, the big one, it's way too big. And so they started, they converged somewhere in the middle. And the one they chose was like 2 millimeters too small to use a desktop drive. And there was an argument, why don't we use this, why don't we just go 2 millimeters larger? Who's going to notice 2 millimeters? And then we can use a cheaper desktop drive. And Steve and Johnny said, no, this is the size we want to use.
Make it
and,
work.
Yeah, and they do that with every single product. I had the same story with all the mice they made. The remote controls for the Apple TV, iPhones, iPads. The iPad 2 was exactly the same procedure. They use these presentation tables to make these kind of decisions. And Steve would hang out there almost, every afternoon. And next to the presentation tables, you've got a big CAD shop where 15, 16 CAD designers or surface guys, as they're called, sit. And these are the ones who turn the sketches into 3D software models.
So I was going to ask you about that. I mean what kind of like actual prototyping machinery do they have in there?
They have they have like 3 CNC machines. These are big computer controlled milling machines, and they carve out these models out of Ren shape, which is a very dense foam. And the output from that comes from the CAD shop. So they make something, they make a 3D model of something, in software. And they say, well, let's see what that looks like as a physical object. And they'll send it to this machine shop next door, also in the studio, and use the big milling machines there to carve out a model in foam that they can, so they can sort of, get an idea of the overall sort of size and shape and feel of these products. And also in the finishing shop, they also have like a big painting booth, so that they can and sanding booth, so they can make these models pretty finished. They can make them look fairly realistic.
Wow, out of foam too.
Well, yeah, they do that for the initial studies. When they do the thing like with the 12 Mac Minis, they actually outsource that to a shop in Fremont, which is across the bay, and it's run by a bunch of these sort of master technicians from Hong Kong. And they make these models, and they cost about $25,000, $50,000 each.
Wow.
And they look really realistic.
They must really trust these guys too, right? And that seems kind of crazy that they would risk outsourcing that.
Right. Well, these guys, yeah, it's a big shop though, and they have a lot of specialists there. You know, like it's like a dozen people or more,
uh-huh.
and they specialize in making these models, and they do it for several different companies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, yeah, but you know, they have sort of secrecy and obscurity. No one knows about them, right? So
until
no
today,
until now, yeah. So exactly, but you know, I looked it up actually, and you know, you'll find this. You know, it's a niche in the design world, industrial design world. You'll find these sort of model shops all over the world, you know, that do this kind of specialist services for big companies. But yeah, Apple uses this one company in Fremont a lot. And so anyway, you know, so and then they have this is the big main space as you go in. If you go to the left, then there's another big open space, which is where all the designers' workstations are. This is mm-hmm. where they have their desks.
Mm-hmm.
And there are five tables, and they're subdivided with these sort of low dividers. And you know that each designer has their computer there, so they all work in a big open space together. And there's all sorts of toys and stuff everywhere, you know, bikes and skateboards and basketball hoops, and they play soccer in between the desks and stuff like that. And they got this big booming sound system. They had this massive stereo.
Is it a Sonos?
No.
How good could it be? Sonos.
They had Sonos-like speakers, though. They got 20 satellites all around.
Wow.
And these big subwoofers, and then they built this. They got all these. What's the name of the Apple server? The rack server?
X-Serves,
yeah. So yeah. They had a couple of X-Serves just for streaming iTunes music. And, you know, probably every kind of music, you know, under the sun they got on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then next to that, they have a big kitchen. And the kitchen is kind of like, that's kind of the heart of the studio, really. This is where the sort of magic happens. And the kitchen has a really big wooden table. And then twice a week, sometimes three times a week, they do these morning brainstorming sessions, and all the designers have to be there. So they all have to be present, including Johnny, and they brainstorm, you know, for 3 hours. And it starts with making coffee. So they make coffee for each of them. They have a big expensive espresso machine. And then mm-hmm. a couple of the designers will make coffee for everybody. And they sit down and they brainstorm whatever they, you know, like whatever the problem the group is working on, they will all tackle together. So sometimes it's like, you know, a model presentation. They'll do the same thing with the models of the Mac Minis, and they'll discuss it. Or sometimes it's like even just, you know, like the detail of a speaker grill or a button.
Mm-hmm.
they
spend like a whole day talking about one button.
Yeah,
I bet you that's happened before.
Doing it. Yeah, and it's they do this is sort of like the secret of how they work, you know, uh-huh. because they get this great mind meld. And it's super creative, you know, like no idea is a stupid idea. But at the end of the session, you know, Johnny and whoever the lead designer, whatever product they're discussing, will gather all the sketches together and they'll go through them. And they all use these notebooks, these bound notebooks. And sketching is like, you know, super important to how they think. They all think really visually.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll get together and they'll make copies of all the notebooks with all the sketches in them and, you know, try to keep a bind of all the best ideas. And you know, this is like kind of the secret of how they work, of how they get this, you know, all these breakthroughs, because they're able to this sort of groupthink, you know, produces some amazing results.
That's incredible. Is this space? Give me an idea of the scale of it. Is it like huge, like football field? Is it like small, like a Starbucks? I mean, what's it? How big is it in there?
It's probably about half a football field. I think it's 15,000 square feet.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big space, and it's very industrial. You know, it's like polished concrete floors and steel beams. And,
I would expect
and
lights no less. Everywhere.
And it looks just like kind of like the Mac stores, you know. So there's glass walls and glass partitions.
Uh-huh.
And right in the middle, right next to the CAD studio, the only private office in the space is Johnny's office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 15 by 15 cube, and it's lined by glass. So it looks just like one of the, you know, the glass in the Apple stores. and he has nothing in there, right? It's just like, it's
just a desk, the one that he designed, a chair, well, and a pencil, Newsom and one sheet of paper. It.
Yeah, exactly. And Mark Newsom designed his desk. And I think it was probably very much like the desk that went on sale at this Red auction.
Oh, wow. I was joking, but you think it looks like ago. That, huh?
No. And it's a desk, a chair, a lamp,
mm-hmm.
A couple of shelves for some stuff, and his pencils lined up on his desk.
Huh. I wonder if his lamp looks like that one from Pixar.
Oh, yeah. Probably. Maybe.
That's probably like a gift from Steve Jobs. That's really cool. Of course, if people want to read more about this, it's in your book, right?
Yeah. And this video is really cool. I think the video really brings it alive. And I'm going to, you know, I'm sort of trying to decide what to do with the video because my initial idea was to make it like a part of it. I was going to do a sort of DVD extras, like all the extras, all the stuff that got pulled out of the book, which is a lot of detail about the studio and how they worked and a gallery of all the designers. So for the first time, you know, I've been able to identify all the designers. I tell who they are and what they do in the studio.
Oh, wow. Which
that didn't get included in the book. So I was going to put this thing together as a mini site, and I was going to say, you know, buy the book, and you can get access to this password-protected site. So I'm still thinking of doing that, but I might open it up, too. I might just make it public.
Well, you said that people could get access to the video by leaving you a review on your book, good or bad. Right?
Yeah.
Preferably good.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. they turned out most of that.
I ate this book, but I really want to see the video. So they could do that on Amazon and then iBookstore, right? And then they would email you with their username and their – or I guess that's all you need, right? What's the email address?
Yeah. Say again. Oh, so Johnny Ive Book, J-O-N-Y-I-V-E Book at cultofmac.com. So Johnny Ive Book at cultofmac.com. And just, yeah, include your username, you know, and where you left the review.
Okay,
and then
awesome.
I was sending people back the URL to check out the video. And they really liked it. There was a really good response.
Even the one image I saw really piqued my interest. I was like, this is really cool. Because, I mean, how else would you ever get to see something like that?
Yeah, no one goes in. I mean, even Scott Forstall apparently wasn't allowed.
Right. Yeah, they would never let Scott in, ever. He tried to sneak in wearing disguises.
Yeah, it drove him crazy. Well, you know, the old CEO, Scully, was locked out of the first studio.
That's so crazy that you could be the CEO there and still not get into this area.
Exactly, yeah. Well, you know, but they had to, like, you know, give him a special badge to get in there. But, yeah, they've always taken secrecy very, very seriously.
Wow. Yeah, like the most serious of any company I've ever heard of.
Right.
Hey, guys, before we move on, I want to tell everyone about lynda.com because I love lynda.com. That's lynda.com. I love to learn. And as I mentioned previously in another episode, lynda.com is one of the ways I learn all the applications that I just want to learn more about, whether it's Photoshop, Lightroom 5. They can help you learn an entire application with their excellently produced video series, and they're all taught by industry-leading experts. And the great thing about Lynda is you can learn at your own pace. So it's a flat fee to sign up. It's $25 a month, but for that price, you get access to their entire library of educational material. It's over 2,000 high-quality videos. The videos are interesting. The instructors are interesting. It's a wonderful way to learn a new application. And you can learn other stuff, too. They have Apple-specific courses. You can learn Objective-C with their essential training program. You can learn how to use iCloud better. You can learn how to use Final Cut Pro. You can learn how to use GarageBand. You could even just learn Mavericks new features or the basics of iOS 7. If you're interested in photography, you can learn DSLR foundations. You can learn how to do composition. You can learn how to use specific cameras. I have a 5D Mark II. That's a Canon. And they have a course that just teaches you how to use that specific camera. Mm. It's a wonderful way to learn on your own, in your own time. And what I did is I just, you know, spent like 30, 40 minutes a day on one of these courses. The courses are broken down into short segments. And then you just kind of, you know, plurk your way through them. And before you know it, you know how to use Lightroom 5. You know how to use your camera better. So could not recommend it any more highly. I was thrilled to have Lynda as a sponsor. Head over to lynda.com, lynda.com/cultcast. And you can learn all you want for 7 days. Sign up for a free trial. You'll get 7 days absolutely free. Learn as much as you want. And then you make the decision. If you want to stick around and learn more, $25 a month gets you unlimited access. And I think you're really going to love it. So thanks to Lynda for sponsoring the show. Thrilled to have Lynda as a sponsor. And you guys, let's move on. Let me bring up my notes here. I was so engulfed in your design studio conversation, Leander, that we didn't get to cover any of our news items for this week. So let's cruise through those. But before we do that, actually, people aren't going to want to miss next week. We're going to have a very special announcement. something. We've been working on a little something in the background.
Oh.
And I am very excited. And we're going to be announcing it next show. So make sure you stay tuned for that, or tune in next week for that. And then also, Leander, we're doing a new segment at the end of this show. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking about doing interviews with different, you know, developers and people from the Apple community. Mm-hmm. And that got me thinking that maybe we should call the segment like Cultcast Community Chats. And I was like, no, that's too long. So I think maybe we should just call it Cultcast Commie Chats. I don't know.
Commies?
The Commie Chats. So at the end of this episode, we're going to be broadcasting an interview that Leander did with Larry O'Connor from OWC, Other World Computing. And they sell a lot of great Apple accessories, hard drives. I've bought several things from them. Leander, do you want to tell us what you guys are going to be talking about?
Yeah, so like you said, Larry's business, OWC, sells a lot of upgrade kits.
Yeah.
And they sell SSDs and stuff like that, and memory, all kinds of stuff to sort of soup up your old Mac. So we talked about that, and we talked about the new Mac Pros and Apple's new hardware. And Larry had some, you know, some maybe controversial opinions about them.
Uh-oh, like Kyle Weens did?
not quite that controversial. You know, I mean, like, he's in the business of, you know, upgrading, and he's an old... Larry's your old hard school hacker, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Old school hacker, sorry, not hard school. And, you know, he believes, he, you know, that you should be able to hack your machine. But he had some interesting advice about, you know, what the best strategy for getting the best bang for your buck, which I'd never heard before.
Yeah, they really do a good job at that. I had purchased an OWC data doubler, which people have asked me before how I installed an SSD on my old Mac, because I pulled out the hard drive, or I pulled out the DVD drive, actually, and installed an SSD. And I did that with an OWC data doubler. It's like basically a rack you install in your Mac, and then you can install an extra hard drive. So if people want to check it out, head to MacSales.com. You can check out all their great stuff, but we'll be broadcasting that segment after the show. Let's move on with some news, guys. Let's start off with something I thought was pretty cool. Are either of you guys Pandora users?
Nope.
Jerk. Leander?
Well, you know, funny enough, I was in a cafe all day yesterday, and they had Pandora on, and it was great.
I love Pandora. Yeah. And their app just got updated. So for those of you that use it, you can now set an alarm on Pandora. So it will wake you up at a time of your choosing with one of your favorite stations.
Yeah.
And super handy if you like Pandora. And also, you know, it's way better than the built-in alarm sounds. The only downside is that you can only set one alarm. And so you can't, like, have multiple alarms set and turn them on and off, which is kind of a bummer. And then also... sucks. It has to be on the Pandora app when you lock your phone at night, because otherwise your alarm won't go off, and that would be a bummer, right? Because then you'd miss work.
So many headaches to deal with.
I'll tell you what's not a headache: Apple's new 12 Days of Gifts app that you could download for free.
How is that? Have you downloaded that?
I have downloaded that, but it actually hasn't started yet. So. So as of December 26th, I think, is when it starts. Apple is going to basically switch this app on. You can download it now. And then they're going to give you one free thing a day for 12 days. And that got me thinking, I get a lot of my apps for free, but not because I email people and ask for them. Like, there's a lot of great ways to get free apps. Do you guys ever like use any apps to keep track of, like, when full price apps go to free and then download them then?
I mean, sometimes we post about them if it's like a big app, like, what's that sword fighting game? But usually iTunes will promote like an app of the week and make them free. And so I always use that. Oh, Infinity Blade.
Right. I feel like that app goes free like every 2 weeks.
No, it never goes free. It's only
really
twice, actually. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Thanks for correcting me in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Jerk. Well, I found three great apps that I want to promote that will allow you to essentially look for apps that used to be, you know, used to cost money and are now free. And the three apps that I've used and found to be super handy. The first one is App Shopper. And then the second one is App Price Drop. And then the third one is Apps Gone Free. And essentially what all these apps do are they just show you apps that used to cost money that are now free for a limited time generally. And you could search using well, you could tell it that you have an iPhone. It will show you just iPhone apps, or just an iPad app, or universal apps. And I use these apps all the time to find free apps. It's a great way to find all sorts of high quality apps. And this isn't just crap that you don't want to download. I mean, this is like really good apps that you actually might even consider paying for. So if you're looking to get free apps, just download these, App Shopper, App Price Drop, Apps Gone Free, and just check daily. That's what I do. And it's a great way to figure out when the right time is to get some of those cool apps in the App Store. It's also a great way to discover new apps, I've learned. So, Leander, you should download them because I know that you like free stuff.
Yeah. I know, yeah. App Shopper, I used to have, but I'll I should download it again.
Apps Gone Free especially is really great. I think that's probably currently my favorite one.
Apps Gone Free.
Apps Gone Free, yeah.
Okay, good tip.
I want to run this thing by you guys. I thought this was pretty interesting, and I want to get your opinions on whether or not you think this is plausible. So recently, because it's such a slow news week, there was an analyst who spiced things up by saying that eventually he thought it was possible that Apple and Microsoft would merge.
Impossible.
within the next decade. Yeah. Let me read you what he said. He went on to elaborate that while this is all absolute speculation, this is Keith Fitzgerald who predicted this, by the way, for Money Map Press.
Money Map Press,
yeah, where I get all my financial news. If you examine what Apple wants to accomplish on its mobile market and Microsoft's initiative, there is a cross-polarization of devices. I'll be honest, I don't even know what that means.
A cross-polarization.
I think he made that term up.
I think so, too.
He means cross-pollination.
That's what most analysts
think. He's like, it's quite clear there's going to be cross-pollination. Actually, you know what, Leander? I think you're right. I think that is probably what he meant.
It was probably autocorrect or something, right?
Yeah, right. What is a cross-polarization? Doesn't make any sense.
It's no such thing.
Do you guys think there's any chance that we would see this happen in 3 years? Or, sorry, 10 years?
No.
Leander?
I feel like Apple would just let Microsoft die on the street before buying it.
Yeah.
Like, they would say, P-I-S-S on its you, brain. Like, sorry, like, you know, they would never buy Microsoft. I feel like they would buy Google before they bought Microsoft, you know.
I think that's actually true. Yeah, I don't understand what they would do with Microsoft. Like, what,
right. What assets does it have
besides the Xbox?
The Xbox is like, okay, if they bought the Xbox team, which supposedly Stephen Elop already kind of wants to jettison that business anyway. That's the only thing that I think Apple might like, but even then I feel like they could do a better job.
Yeah, I mean what else does Microsoft have that would kind of
Office, duh.
I mean, Office is huge. Office is huge.
And actually wasn't it getting some the SkyDrive? I mean, a lot of it's cloud service stuff.
Oh, cloud stuff?
Yeah, haven't people been saying they've actually done a pretty good job of that?
I don't know.
I haven't heard that.
I think the business stuff
should know.
Yeah, right. I know all things about that. So right. I haven't heard that. And yeah, I mean, Apple has their own online iWork solution or productivity solution. So I don't know why this is just such a zany prediction. It just goes to show when things get slow, people just start coming up with all sorts of crazy ideas.
It's good for fun, though.
It's great fun. I wish this would happen more often. I think Apple's going to buy Jack in the Box. That's what I heard.
Well, they got good ads. I mean, they could definitely benefit from its advertising.
Exactly. Exactly.
The bubblehead spokesman. He'd be actually perfect, wouldn't he? On stage there at the Steve Notes.
You mean that Jack guy with the round head?
Yeah, right.
That would be so great if he got up on stage and talked about Apple products.
You know, that's not a bad idea, though. I mean, I think of any company that I can, that, you know, that has genuinely funny, consistently funny ads, it's Jack in the Box.
Yeah, their ads are great. I think Budweiser has great ads, too.
Bud?
Yeah, they do. They usually the beer
so
companies
many great ads.
Have tons of great ads. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what? Name one.
I just saw one the other day like where
the frogs. The what's up?
Frogs from 2002 or something.
I just saw one the other day where this guy was like, "Hey guys, I created like this time machine," and all his friends were like, "No way!" And he jumps in, and then he comes back out with the future version of himself, and then the future version of himself is like totally making fun of all of his friends, and all his friends think he's really cool, and they go arm in arm inside the house. And it was so super stupid but really funny. Obviously not well, not good for describing to people.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're like, what?
The joke?
Oh, that sounds hilarious.
Yeah, it sounds really dumb when I describe it. The funny part was is like when he came out with his future self, it was just so ridiculous, and his future self is like super cool. Anyway. Budweiser.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Why? Hey guys, I thought we could wrap up with a question from one of our listeners. This comes from our Facebook page, facebook.com/thecultcast. Thank you to everyone who comments there and leaves us questions and stuff. This is Michael Ramsey, and he's kind of got a Microsoft-related question as well. I thought we could help him out. He says, "Hey guys, I have a question for you. I'm going back to school and I need a new laptop. I have always had a Dell and really no complaints with it. But then I fell in love with my iPhone and iPad and now I want a MacBook." This is a story actually I've heard before. "Will I have compatibility issues with all the downloading PowerPoints or using USB to create files on school computers?" And he's talking about Microsoft Office products. You know, like writing a paper on a school computer and then working on it on my MacBook. So his school must have PCs. He wants to know if he's going to have compatibility issues.
Yeah.
Buster, you went to college not
I recently
too long ago.
The university.
Okay. Yeah. So why don't you?
They had actually our school had a you could log into it a PC or Mac, but you'd be fine because there's Word for Mac as well, so you can save Word files on it as well. I mean, I never ran into any problems having a Mac on a campus that was dedicated to PC.
I feel like all students now have Macs.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, more people are going to have Macs than not almost now.
Yeah, and I know that one of the big initiatives Microsoft worked on, I'm not sure if it was the last version of Office or the one before that, was making their PC and Mac programs more compatible.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to use it in college a lot. It's been a while since I've used Office for Mac. Now I actually just use Google Drive for like my word processing and that kind of stuff. But I never had any problems. Every once in a while, PowerPoint might give you an issue because
There's PowerPoint for Mac.
There is PowerPoint for Mac, but I did find that sometimes like animations and stuff wouldn't work quite right.
Yeah.
So that could be an issue. But again, I was using a previous version, so the new version may have ironed out all those issues. But I don't think you should have any problem. Not these days.
No, I think you'd be great.
You'd probably be good to go.
I mean, the only bet. I mean, unless you got like a Surface 2, that's, you know, then you'd be in trouble.
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know if using a Surface 2 for college would be a good idea. That'd be like trying to use your iPad for college.
You could do it.
I don't know. I don't know if you could do that very successfully.
In fact, I'm going to tell him to not get a MacBook and just use his iPad.
Why not just use his iPhone?
Oh, okay.
And Google Drive.
You just use Siri to dictate your whole essay.
Oh, well, there you go. You won't even have to type. And every single one of your ports will be perfectly accurate in every way.
Yeah, when you get a D.
When your professor inquires if English is your first language, you'll know that maybe Siri isn't understanding you as well as she was advertised to. All right, guys. Well, let's wrap it up there.
Okay.
Booyah. Of course, make sure you stick around for our commie chats coming up next. And then next week, we're going to have that special announcement. So make sure you come back and visit us again next week. But that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. You know, if you'd like, you can hang out with us on Twitter. Buster's BST3R, Leander's L. Caney. I'm at Airfon. And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. Until then, this has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys in about 35 seconds. Well, it's going to be just Leander, so technically we'll see you guys next time, but Leander will see you soon with Larry.
Okay, so I'm here today with Larry O'Connor, the founder and CEO of Otherworld Computing, which is a company based in upstate New York.
No, we're Woodstock, Illinois.
North. Okay, yeah. Close enough. Woodstock. That's what threw me off. So,
for what it's worth, and it's worth noting, you know, we actually have locations in three states now. Our headquarters is in Woodstock. Our design, we actually have production facilities in, Texas, just north of Austin, and then our creative design center is now in downtown Austin.
Oh, really? Okay. Next to Apple, huh?
Apple's a little bit outside of Austin, but yeah, I guess you could say in general next to Apple, okay. In the vicinity of Apple.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's talk about that afterwards. So, Larry, you have some thoughts about the new Mac Pro. What do you think about it?
My first thought on it is just the I guess Apple's general direction, which is to a certain degree is fixing things that aren't necessarily broken, and or focusing on more on form than function.
When you say fixing things, I mean you say breaking things, right? I mean they're not. You don't think these are very user friendly.
For what a Macintosh costs today, and looking in the past, and what a Macintosh has always cost, I find it really concerning that these changes, which in a lot of ways seem to be driven by form versus function, limit somebody's future upgradability and the ability to evolve the machine to future needs.
So why isn't the Mac Pro very upgradable? I mean, it has 12 Thunderbolt ports.
Oh, Thunderbolt ports are fantastic, and I think that is the external expansion options for the new Mac Pro are very exciting. That being said, the internal PCIe slots on the 2010 and later Mac Pro, all of them, are faster than what any single Thunderbolt port can do. While Thunderbolt gives you great external expansion capabilities, you have the option to add what you wanted to an existing Mac Pro. I mean, you can put USB 3 in the Mac Pro. You can put a faster video card into it. You can add a PC. You can add our Excelsior PCIe SSD to that product. You can add eSATA. You can add mini SAS. You can do all these things via PCIe slots, which actually offer in the current Mac Pro about twice the bandwidth that you get out of a Thunderbolt port.
And obviously, you won't be able to do that in the new Mac Pro.
The new Mac Pro is not an inexpensive machine, and it comes really loaded. To the hilt, quite frankly, you look at the video and you look at the processors are not a thought, but it's a great machine out of the box. But in a couple of years, something has changed and there's better GPUs available. Maybe there's a new technology that uses more than 2 gigabits. I'm sorry, 20 gigabits rather is available through Thunderbolt. You don't have an option to take advantage of those technologies, certainly not to their full capability. You're pretty well stuck with you're stuck with the video that the Mac Pro has built into it, and you're limited to Thunderbolt 2 for connectivity. You can't just drop it in a 16x PCIe card into the machine and take advantage of up to double what a single Thunderbolt port can do.
Yeah, so this is a step backwards in your book, huh?
It's a couple steps forward and maybe a step backwards here and there. I'm not going to say it steps backwards, but it certainly limits the flexibility of the machine. It puts the user in a position, in a couple of years where, if there is some new technology that isn't supportable to the full capability or the necessary performance capability via those Thunderbolt ports, the choice would be, the option would be buying, a new Mac Pro. And again, that's a pretty substantial investment.
Apple has done this kind of thing many times in the past, and a good example, I guess, is the sealed batteries in everything from the iPod onwards. And they've always said that people say they want to be able to replace their batteries, but, you know, their surveys, their internal surveys show that only a very small proportion do. Do you think that's different for the sort of the professional market, for the Mac Pro market?
We are, I mean, still seeing substantial upgrade activity on Mac Pros going all the way, even though they don't run the current OS. I mean, machines going all the way back to the first 2006 models.
Hmm.
For what those workhorses can do and the environments that they're put into, now, I would argue most people would prefer not to have to migrate. Certainly, IT staffs prefer not have to not having to migrate entire departments to a new platform to achieve, you know, some new capability versus being able to drop in a card and go.
So you see, people are keeping these machines for, you know, what, 8 years now?
Absolutely.
And upgrading them, you know, steadily over the years to keep them more current.
Well, the thing of it is, I mean, you know, the 2006 is extreme. I mean, it's certainly, I won't say falling out of favor, but it's the activity and the what people are doing with it is certainly declining. But when you look at a 2008, certainly a 2009 or later, a lot of those systems with the number of cores they have, you know, today's software is just beginning to fully utilize the processing cores. Now, you know, the GPU is certainly a limiting factor, and there's some new GPUs on the market today that, you know, give a substantial upgrade in that department,
right.
Not the 4K like the new Mac Pro, but if you don't need 4K, you know, it's pretty amazing what you can do with these machines that are, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And in terms of processing capability, you know, the base 2013 model, you know, with this next generation Xeons actually, you know, falls short of what, you know, the higher end 2010s and, you know, certainly 2012s, you know, shipped with. So it's an interesting balance, to say the least. And again, going back, we're, you know, going back to the original statement, you know, a lot of software applications, you know, are yet to fully take advantage of those multiple cores. And if you're already real time, which a lot of applications people are using on their macros in production environments, you know, are real time or very close to real time, or with very minimal, well, relatively speaking, you know, minimal cost upgrades can achieve real time performance. If you're at real time, you know, there's for editing and such, you're not going to get faster with a new machine.
Huh, yeah, right. And of course, there's a lot of advances in the GPU space, right? So, like you're saying, having that as an option is something that I think people should really think about.
I can go into all their Macs. I just, you know, the iMac, the new iMac design introduced last year was is a beautiful machine, but I personally would, you know, argue that, you know, the average consumer, you know, doesn't really have a great concern with, you know, that slim look on them. I mean, it's an illusion. It's a beautiful art piece, but does the average consumer care that it's got a slim back versus the previous flat back? I mean, I think all the iMac, all the aluminum iMacs, I think look, you know, fantastic personally.
Well, I did actually, you know, and that's why I went and bought one, and then I discovered a couple of weeks ago that it doesn't have a DVD drive. which I wasn't even aware of when I bought it. I was like, "Oh, that's how they got it so slim."
Well, yeah, it's form over function. And the other, you know, concerning thing with the iMac, to achieve that profile on the 21.5-inch, you know, they reduced the number of memory slots, and they took away. Well, it is user upgradable. We have a kit that allows a customer to do so, and. Fortunately, laws protect consumers in terms of, you know, their warranty's not, as long as they don't break it, their warranty is still intact following an upgrade. That's the nice thing about, you know, being able to do these upgrades. I mean, effectively, there are laws on the books that protect consumers, and, you know, the number one rule is, as long as what you've done has not broken something, you know, the warranty is still, yes,
in effect. I never knew that. That's very interesting. Oh, that's great. That's really good to know.
Yeah, we don't, I mean, we're certainly not out there to seek people, operating without a warranty. And again, this actually goes back to the 50s and the 60s. I forget the actual name of the ruling, but it came down to car manufacturers had attempted to void people's warranties when they, you know, added fins and, you know, other, you know, cosmetic details to vehicles. And then, you know, if there'd be an engine or transmission problem, well, you modified our car, you know, your warranty's void. And that went to the Supreme Court, and now they decided no, and unless something you've done is actually, you know, how to say, caused the, was damaging to the original component, that's, you know, being called for under warranty, you know, you are entitled to your warranty.
Cool.
So we've had we haven't had issues, I would say, with respect to this. And, you know, we definitely appreciate Apple's support of those that, you know, do want to push their machines to a higher limit and perhaps upgrade them to a little bit more than the factory had. Apple supports, there's a lot of upgrades that Apple supports as user upgradable. Some, you know, push the extreme in terms of technical ability, and thus Apple doesn't support that. We put it out there, but again, as long as you don't break it in the process of upgrading it, and by and large, I mean, that's, you know, as long as you take your time and, you know, and use the videos and the information we provide, or, you know, take heed, and if it's, you know, not something you're comfortable with, take it to a technician. You know, all these upgradables are doable. But the fact, and going back to the 21.5-inch, the fact that you have to cut the screen off to get to the memory bays if you want to, you know, upgrade it to, you know, 16 gig or even 8 gig on the 2012s, which came with as little as 4, I think it's ridiculous. And that's, you know, I mean, form is great, but a machine with that kind of cost, and hey, these machines perform great, you know, out of the gate. And you pick them up, even in the lower end stock configurations, you know, they're just fine. But, you know, a year, 2, 3 years later, you know, I know Apple wants you just to walk into the store and buy a new one.
Yeah, yeah.
If this was a PC for half the cost, you know, that would be more arguable. But in that space, I mean, PC people are even more cost sensitive. If you're making this kind of investment in a Mac, which historically, I mean, Macs are built exceptionally well and they lasted a very long time. But now we're making it harder. I should say Apple is making it harder. Now they are making it harder to extend these machines, keep them functioning out there. You know, when it comes time to, you know, need a little more kick or just basic maintenance. I mean, a drive fails inside. You know, now you got to take it into the Apple Store and potentially spend a small fortune if they're even still supporting the machine. Which, you know, we get emails from customers. You know, the Apple Store is really good, but on older systems, I mean, there are people, you know, they have 4 or 5 year old Macs that they'd like to get taken, you know, care of. They bring them in and, you know, there's doesn't seem to be a whole lot of support for, you know, these older systems.
Yeah, yeah, they obsolete them, don't they, after a few years. So, Larry, what's your most popular upgrade? What's the thing you sell the most of?
Memory, and, you know, it's a close battle. Memory and solid state drives, you know, are definitely the number one upgrades, and they're the most effective upgrades as well. Adding more memory eliminates paging. A lot of applications are very actually the OS, 10.6.8 and later, has become very efficient with maximizing use of available memory. So a machine that has not been upgraded to at least the memory that your most memory hungry application can use, that's a machine that, you know, is waiting for a night and day difference that can be made with a simple memory upgrade. And then of course solid state drives. You're still running off a platter drive, which a large number of Mac users certainly are. Now, it's easy to replace the existing drive with our SSD. You know, our kits come complete with everything you need to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, video installation guides, you know, show you how to do it, and I mean really walk you through and, you know, take any mystery. Or it's not rocket science to do it. For a lot of people, it sounds complex, but when you have to watch the video and you'll see it's, you know, a few screws come out, and the top comes off, and
you
swap. I mean, these are upgrades that make a huge difference. And that's the other thing. Like going back to 2010 with the SSD, you know, Jobs held up the MacBook Air 2010 and proclaimed it faster than, you know, their flagship 17-inch MacBook Pro. And it wasn't that it was some new fancy, incredible, processor technology. It was that the 2010 MacBook Air in its stock configuration now came with an SSD.
Uh-huh, right. So if you know if you add an SSD to the 17-inch MacBook Pro, it
runs circles around it.
Yeah, right. So, what machine do you see people upgrading the most? You know, is it like is there a particular model that you see that people like to upgrade? Is that has particular longevity?
You know, I gotta say, people are literally upgrade just about everything. I mean, whether it's Mac Minis, I mean, the iMacs or. I would say a little more, we'll say niche, but are probably in the lower end of the pack when it comes to SSDs, just because of the complexity of getting inside those machines.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in general, you know, we see a lot of upgrade activity on machines that are, you know, in the realm of 2 to 3 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't really start to fall off, you know, until you get the machines that are older than 5 or 6 years. So it,
yeah. Well, I guess, you know, if you upgrade a 2 or 3 year old machine, you can keep it for another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, in the case of a Mac, that's how it's been, and that's why these new machines are in that respect a little disappointing.
Yeah, yeah, right. So what's the most extreme upgrade you've seen?
Most extreme upgrade, you know, is of course tearing apart the IMAX to add a second add the SSD in, add a potentially take the existing drive, put a second SSD inside. When I say extreme, those are that's the most complex in terms
You have to cut the screen off?
With the 2012 and later, you have to cut the screen off. With the 2011 and prior, you still have to remove the screen, and you know, we include the suction cups and the right tools to do it. It's just complex. It's a little. It's about a 45-minute to an hour upgrade.
Is that covered by your warranty still? Does that
Yeah, we include the same when you upgrade a 2012 iMac or later in terms of doing, and that's just a 21.5-inch. You know, we're not. We have a kit coming for the 2012 and 2013s to upgrade to a larger hard drive. We haven't introduced that yet. Now we're still producing the video and getting all the documentation in line. We have the hardware to support it. We haven't put it out there yet because we want to make sure that we show people. But in general, when you're looking at the 21.5-inch, which the only way to upgrade memory on the 21.5-inch, slim 2012, the new iMac without the optical drive, is to cut the screen. That absolutely, is covered. Again, don't break the screen.
And right.
We include the right tools so that it can be done without, I would say great difficulty. All these upgrades are typically more tedious than they are complex.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these machines that are designed to be assembled in, large factories in Asia. So there is a way to get into them, isn't there?
Well, there's always a way to get into them, but honestly, Apple is building these systems less and less to be serviceable in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So how did you get into the business line? Why don't you tell me a little bit about the background of the company?
Sure. Yeah, back in the late 80s, I was actually an Apple II user. I had an Apple II GS. I loved the machine, and I personally needed more memory for my 2GS. Upgraded drives and other aspects, and that was back in the day when these systems were wide open, and in some respects, more fun than what we work with today.
Well, Hutt was designed the Apple II, and he loved the old upgrade cycle. So that was a machine designed by a hardware hacker.
Absolutely, positively, and that's why you got to love Woz for it. It was certainly a very friendly way to go versus, of course, back the same time frame. You had to have a special tool and just to crack open a Mac. I mean,
right? Yeah, yeah. Right. That was Steve Jobs' contribution. Yeah, the Torx driver.
Two very significant extremes, coming out of the same.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's funny, isn't it? Because you see that in Apple, there were the two extremes right there. The super lockdown. And the open and hackable as can be, the two philosophies in the same company.
Yeah, and the Mac for a period of time, went to at least a more upgradable platform, and you got to the power PCs, even the 2SIs and any of the Macs that came in the 90s. You could open them up without some crazy tool, and you had slots that supported adding on different functional cards, which that was the only way to go. I mean, there's just too many different things out there to just build it all in at the factory. And I go back to the original statement too. I mean, these are not inexpensive machines. They have a machine that you're suddenly limited to whatever it came with from the factory when you're spending thousands of dollars potentially on said system. That can be a little bit harsh.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So go back to your Apple II, you were looking for more memory?
Yeah, memory prices have skyrocketed due to supply issue related to, I want to say at the time it was an earthquake in Asia, and I mean the equipment used to be a lot more difficult to recalibrate and more sensitive to seismic situations, we'll say, back in that day. And in any event, memory had gone up in cost, and the preceding, and following year, I kind of noticed that prices were still sitting where they were. Dug in and did a little more research on the chips and what was actually being used to upgrade these machines, and found that it really was an Apple, that is a space phenomena, that everybody raised prices and then they were happy to keep their prices up because the rest of the, at least on the PC side, costed, memory is a commodity and memory prices had come back down in terms of what chips were necessary to make these upgrades. And instead of spending $400 or $500 and having at the time couldn't drive, and they get a ride to the local Apple store, I should say Computer Bay, the local Apple certified service provider, I'll get a ride to the Apple store, have them check my machine in, and then have to come back in a couple days to get it, and all the inconveniences associated therewith. Began offering an upgrade for $100, with instructions on and phone support. Was there to provide a helping hand if anybody had any questions, but offer this memory for a fraction of the cost that actually any of the catalogers and certainly local Apple service centers were offering. Plus, where they have to show people, instead of spending all that time driving in, all that time, I mean, heck, 5-10 minutes or more waiting just to check your machine in, with this kit delivered to your door in less than 10 minutes, you can comfortably, and I say comfortably because you're in the comfort of your own home, put the chips on the board yourself and be up and running.
And you said you were too young to drive, so I take it you were a teenager then?
Yeah, correct.
How old were you?
I was 14 when
really? It was founded. So how long did it take? How long did it take for your business as a 14-year-old to take off?
Within about I used America Online, and they had an online mall and great chat rooms at the time, and it took off pretty quick.
Huh? Really? So you were using AOL?
Yeah.
Clever. And it took off pretty quick. Did you run it all the way through college, or did you skip college and?
Now, the first employees, the first team members came on board in the, in 1990, and I was actually driving back and forth between home and Marquette University, and in 92, moved into this is a full-time role, and the rest is relative history.
And so how big is the company now? How many people do you employ?
Today we employ about 100, I want to say it's about 165 team members.
And you have three locations?
Correct. We have a shipping facility in Nevada to better serve our our southwest region customers. We have our main headquarters in Wichita, Illinois. And last year, I moved some of our team members down to Austin to establish our creative design center. We have our manufacturing facility also just north of Austin that produces our memory and our solid-state drives.
And why Austin? Because it's a tech town.
It's a great town. I mean, there's a lot of great creative individuals in Austin. I mean, it was a great place to enable us to continue to hire and expand our team. Plus, again, we've had a manufacturing presence in this state for a number of years. It's very friendly to manufacturers. I mean, it was originally a dream of mine to put this facility have a dedicated facility in Illinois, and we have a campus space to do it, but as it would turn out, Illinois there was not a practical way for us to provide this kind of support that kind of operation in Illinois. It was the regulations are a little bit different, and even getting through those hurdles, the kind of talent that used to be in Illinois, you go back a couple decades, they'd migrated out of Illinois because that industry. Again, this kind of manufacturing just wasn't something that was still present in our state. But Texas has been a great state for this. Apple's out here, so it's always nice to be in the vicinity.
Right. Yeah. Do you go out and have barbecue with those guys?
Perhaps. We certainly cross paths in good ways down here.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Great. Well, we better wrap up there, Larry.
Okay.
Thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Certainly. At the end of the day, I mean, our mission is to make these upgrades easy for people. To take the pull back the curtain and take the mystery away. Because once you take the mystery away, I mean, there's great things you can do with Macs. I mean, Macs are great in terms of longevity and their upgradability, and even the latest systems, we're still working on solutions to keep that going.
Well, they used to be, yeah. So we'll see.
Right.
We'll...
They're more challenging today, but with the will, there's a way. And we still have a few tricks up our sleeve.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll have you on another show and talk about that.
Sounds great.
All right, Larry. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, my pleasure, Leander. Have a great one.
You too.
Right. Bye now.
All right, I got to try and log in here. All right, that was pretty good. I hope that that goes well.
No, I'm sure you can edit and chop stuff out you don't like, so.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Or maybe not.
I don't know how to do it. This other guy, Irfan, runs the show. And this is our first sort of experiment, you know, in sort of adding another, we want to add another half hour to the end of the show. And this is, you know, this is how we're going to try and do these interviews at the back end and splice them in. So we'll see. I mean, you know, he knows what he's doing, so I'm sure he'll be able to work with it. And, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I kind of, you know, I think it'll work okay. The only thing I was worried about is I'm thinking like a reporter, right? You know, which is when you do an interview and then you get the juiciest stuff and you put it at the beginning. And the juicy stuff, I think, really was like the kind of stuff we talked about in the middle there, or, you know, maybe even at the end. But it's fine. I can introduce it and I can say that you have some views about, you know, the new Mac Pros that people need to be, you know, that should bear in mind if they're looking at buying one.
Yeah, it really applies to everything. I mean, honestly, you know, Apple, when you look at, and this is, I try not to, you know, get too aggressive towards Apple, but, you know, when you look at the new Retinas, you know, the Retinas really didn't take off. The MacBook Pro Retinas I'm talking about, you know, the MacBook Air remains their number one seller. The MacBook Pro non-Retina 13-inch was their number two seller. And they didn't really have numbers. I don't recall the exact numbers in the Retina. I know when I look at, you know, our web statistics, you know, the Retina is still making up a relatively small percentage of web viewing. But, you know, to the real point, I mean, they're pushing people. And Apple used to, at least to some degree, listen to their customers, you know, to a much greater extent, you know, at least to a greater extent than they do today. I mean, they produced machines that were truly for, you know, prosumers and higher and I would argue higher-end users. They have a much larger consumer following today. Yeah. And the average consumer, you're right, doesn't upgrade their machine. In fact, you know, a lot of people who do the upgrades, you know, have bought machines secondhand. I think the second owners of systems are far more upgrade savvy than the first round owners. I mean, we didn't have time to get into this, but what's absolutely crazy are the number of customers that we encounter today. You know, years after they bought, you know, you look at a 2009 or 2010 Mac Pro, which is those machines are, you know, despite their age, you know, are still incredible powerhouses and more than powerful for what most people's needs are, even, you know, in higher end you know, creative professions. But we run into these customers that bought a machine, they still have the original, you know, 3 gigs or 6 gigs of memory and a single hard drive. Mm-hmm. And they've been using that machine for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years.
And they can get that cheap, I expect, right?
What's that?
They can buy it pretty cheaply.
Oh, absolutely. But it's upgrading is easy, but I take a look at somebody who just spent, especially when you run into a 12-core 2010 owner who still has 6 gigs of memory. You know, I think they kicked it to a 12-gig space in 2012, but has 6 gigs of memory with 12 cores. They spent $5,000 on that machine, on this Mac Pro. You know, X number of years ago, and they never put memory into it, never put it, you know, rated a hard drive, never added an SSD to it. And so they could have spent half that on the base model, put some more memory in and a drive, and once again had a machine that would have run probably 10, 15 times faster for, you know, heavy duty processing than this monster they bought stock.
And so, are you seeing people buying these? So you're saying that you see second owners who know this, yeah? They buy that machine and then bump it up.
Yeah.
So they're savvier.
Maybe it's an IT department that brought in these machines, or, you know, for their create. I mean, we take it for granted that people know what they can do with these machines. And Apple certainly, to some degree, recognizes, hey, most people don't know what they can do. And Apple has done nothing to educate. Apple wants nothing other than, you know, the machine that you have isn't quite doing it for you. You know, go to the Apple Store and get a new one.
Yeah, right. So
they really don't encourage you. I mean, when you walk through the store, hey, I got a 20. I mean, you can't say, hey, I got a 2012, you know, Mac Pro or a 2010 Mac Pro. It's got 6 gigs of memory in this. You know, it's not fast enough for today's needs. They really don't say, well, you can drop an SSD in there. Apple doesn't sell SSDs. You can drop more memory in there. Apple does sell memory, but they really don't. You know, it's not really visible. I mean, they don't talk about the benefits. You know, you can get out of, you know, some very basic upgrades, and it kills me. I mean, people, you know, customers, and it's a fair expectation that they buy a machine at a stock level, it should be, you know, good to go. You know, it should be, why should I need to do anything to it? I mean, that's kind of how Apple presents it. Then they buy these high-end systems at stock, you know, at base, and they don't get anywhere near what they should get out of those systems. Just be, well, come on, 6 gigs of memory with 12 cores, 6 gigs of memory with 4 cores. An application that's going to use any portion of the horsepower that's available in that processor, I would maybe a corner case here or there, is never going to get to anywhere where it ought to be, just on the basis that there's not enough memory for it to really keep on cranking. The processors are always in a state of waiting because there's nothing it's got to queue it through the memory and then it's got to write the page off to the hard drive.
So what's the is there a formula? How do you know how much memory you need to have?
You can use the activity monitor. I mean, you can take a look at the size files you use. I mean, I can make a real broad statement. I mean, if you're using Photoshop, especially with today's images, you can use almost every last drop of memory you can put in there. I mean, Photoshop will use whatever memory is available to it for processing. Smaller images, I mean, if you're doing editing on to a photo, I mean, you should have, I would argue, no less than, 5-6 times for best perform results, five, six times might be pushing, depending upon, but five or six times the amount of memory, installed versus the size of the photo that you're editing is a pretty good calc. And again, especially if you have a hard drive, just listen to the drive or put activity monitor up and take a look at how much it says is being paged. You want your applications running in physical RAM. You want your data that's being processed running in physical RAM, even with an SSD, which makes a huge improvement for somebody who doesn't have the memory necessary, and it is the improvement. You look at a machine from 2006, you can't add more than 3 gigs of memory to those machines, but you can certainly put an SSD in, which gives you that that substantial at least bump forward. I mean, an SSD, especially for the kind of things that get paged to a hard drive when you're doing memory swaps, an SSD can be literally up to about 100 times faster than a hard drive. Actually, that's versus a current hard drive. Never mind a hard drive from many years.
Yeah, an older one. Yeah. Hey, so listen, I've got a question. What's your personal machine? What do you use personally?
I had to temporarily switch into a MacBook Pro Retina, and I absolutely, I won't say I hate the machine, but I dislike it.
Why? Because it.
Well, in the 17-inch I had, and obviously can't get into my 17-inch, the power module, later, whatever you want to call it, between the MagSafe and the, something wrong with the power supply, and it's getting fixed. I may end up switching to, I do like the smaller size. I have to say, I do like the 15-inch, size and weight versus the 17. I'm actually considering moving to a 15-inch, getting a 2012 used Pro for my own personal machine. But getting to the Retina, the one thing that I really like about the MacBook is it has two drive bays, an optical bay and the main bay. In my 17-inch, I had one of our SSDs in the main bay, and I had a 1 terabyte, 2.5-inch drive in the optical bay. Mm-hmm. I always had a backup. I always had Time Machine going. If I screwed something up on the road, I know my files are right there. And with the Retina, there is no second drive bay. I can hang a drive off of it. That's really fine. It obviously gets backed up when I'm plugged in on our network. So that's all set up. But when I'm traveling, if something goes wrong or I make a mistake and wipe something out by accident,
So you hate it because you don't have an onboard Time Machine backup?
I dislike it for that, and I also dislike it just from the point of view that the SSD in there is. Ended up sticking with them. It's actually a good experience to try and test. And we go up to 480. We'll be going up to 1 terabyte for these machines next year. In the meantime, I'm using a 768 Samsung. And that's another thing that's annoying is that the Samsungs have a major Achilles heel, and that when you have more than 75% of your space consumed, the damn things, have little I/O pauses and they don't play well with Apple OS. They create system delays that are a little annoying. So I'm constantly moving data off and trying to reorganize. With the 2-drive system, I didn't have to have that much data.
Okay.
My 1 terabyte was set aside for stuff that doesn't need to be on the SSD.
Right.
Everything's got to be on the SSD when you only have one one drive bay.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Okay.
Hey. If Apple really wanted to do something cool or do something to make users like myself happy, and I mean just pro users in general, put a second bay in the God bless it, you know, retina. there are ways to do it. You know, make it a 7mm bay. In fact, you really, I mean, it's got to be, you know, let people swap the battery. You know, how do I say, you have a battery base, either extended battery or you can buy a module to, you know, put it. Even if Apple did it, where it was only Apple, but they don't want to do it that way. They're promoting their cloud, which, you know, the cloud is, it's great, but I mean, not for mass storage. You know, they're promoting, again, disposability, which I kind of take, you know, significant issue with. You know, next year, by the end of next year, we actually ought to be up to 2 terabytes with our SSD modules for all the retinas going back to 2012. So, but at least we'll be able to put more storage in these guys. But it's just frustrating to me that Apple's moved in a direction that it's great for the consumer, but it, you know, for pro users and higher end users, I mean, there's zero flexibility. And I know you get a lot on your plate, no doubt. But I'll put one solution out there that would solve it for some people. I mean, actually, people are already doing it themselves. I mean, Apple's driving away. It's you know, even, you know, guys that, you know, that I will not name that, you know, continue to stick with Apple, you know, because maybe they're writing for Apple and doing other things, but for their jobs, I mean, they're seriously considering moving, you know, if not to a Hackintosh, you know, moving to a Linux-based solution that, you know, can still run, you know, the software they need, just on the basis that they can get a lot more for their money in these other systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the flexibility they need, the performance they need, and, well, they also know it's, you know, it's something that they can upgrade and, you know, not be, you know, locked in hard to. But, you know, if Apple wants to come up with an interesting and unique solution for, you know, this fringe, I mean, they must consider pro users now more of a fringe versus their consumer base, and that's obvious. I mean, the iPhone, I mean, Mac is 20% of their bottom line now, although, you know, that's, it's considerable, but it's certainly more fringe than, you know, their iDevices today. But a solution, charge $200, or hell, charge $250 and release Mavericks as an open you know, platform OS. You know, let all these PC guys and hacker guys and everybody else, you know, buy, you know, an actual true license to use the non-Apple hardware. You know, don't support it. I mean, when I say don't support it, you know, you don't have to come out and make it work on PCs, but basically give an open license. You know, hack what you want to do. We don't guarantee its functionality, but, you know, how do I say, we'll let you do it. And that'll make it, that to me will solve
a lot of problems. Interesting. Yeah, well,
if they don't want to give us a low-end machine with slots, we can, you know, have PCIe slots and, you know, take advantage of, you know, the high bandwidth and the significant processor to PCIe capabilities that are out there. At least, you know, put an OS out there that lets people.
Yeah, it's a nice dream, Larry. I can't see them doing it.
No, but if they weren't afraid of doing it, I think they'd long term sell a lot more Apple hardware. They'd bring more people over, you know, that would be curious and interested, and they'd probably generate a lot of revenue from them. Again, there's a pretty base out there that, you know, will buy, has, you know, come up with the cash to go out and play.
I mean, well, there was a really vibrant Hackintosh scene, wasn't there, you know, a couple of years ago. I haven't really heard much from it in the last couple of years, but,
you know, it's still pretty damn strong. I mean, you don't hear much from it because, you know, a lot of, I mean, the stuff just works. People are just doing it.
Hmm.
I still see a lot of, I mean, we still see quite a bit of that. And there's some, you know, some followings out there that are in the hundreds of thousands on channels that cover, you know, the different each new Hackintosh thing that they do, or, you know, each new OS update and what they've done, or this card or this processor. So there's some big followings of Hackintosh out there. Now, there were pushes, there were a couple companies that, you know, for lack of a better term, broke the law. Illegally distributed Apple. I mean, did all sorts of things they shouldn't have done. That, you know, were in the limelight. Another company said, "Well, we're going to do this." I mean, whether they're PR stunts or whatever, but in terms of actual hobbyists, there's a pretty significant number of people.
Where's a good place to go to get information about them? You know, you said channels or their websites where you can follow this.
There are YouTube channels that you know, I'm not even supposed to know about this. We don't. Hackintoshing is illegal.
Yeah.
But I've heard that there are. I've been shown that there are numerous YouTube channels that focus on it. There's, you know, as well as Hackintosh sites that still have, you know, the information continues to be posted.
Huh. Okay. Well, we'll have to look into that. Let's. You know, this is an interesting topic. We should talk about this again at another point. Let's set something up.
Yeah. Hey, just let me know. I'm happy to do it. I love sharing what I know. And again, the Mac is an awesome platform, and will continue to be. And just, you know, as long as more people know what they can actually do with it, I think it's an even better value for, you know, all those who own. So
right.
Onwards and upwards.
All right, Larry. Thanks so much, man.